back accidentally, for a visa, to renew my visa. And over the course of, a weekend, I met some incredible Australian founders that I'd completely lost.
So hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. So today we're joined by James Tynan, who is the new partner of Square Peg Capital. So hi James, so could you just share, so I wanted to start the conversation first with Bay Area and Khan Academy. So you were part of the VP, or you were something over at Bay Area and Khan Academy. So what made you move back to Australia? Like, what is that deciding factor that, you decided that let me move back to Australia?
Yeah, thanks and hi. No, it's great to be here. It was a weird kind of situation that led me to Khan Academy. When we moved to the US, I had no intention of coming back to Australia. I was very happy, and I feel like I got very lucky joining Khan Academy. You know, when I joined, it had traditionally been this YouTube channel that Sal had invented, and then they'd hired a product team to turn it into an ed tech, and I got there at just the right time when it was kind of scale into an ed tech from being this amazing kind of YouTube explosion. And so I'd been there for 4.5, almost 5 years, and had an incredible time, scaling that organization. We had over 100 million users. It's a really wild time. But I came back accidentally, for a visa, to renew my visa. And over the course of, a weekend, I met some incredible Australian founders that I'd completely lost touch with Australia. I wasn't really thinking about Australia much. And I think in the course of a few days, I'd met one of the founders from Canva and CultureAmp and Safety Culture, all companies that are now unicorns, but at the time in mid-2017 were on the cusp of that kind of status. And it just blew me away. When I'd left Australia, there was nothing like that, And so what was happening was this incredible explosion of the Australian ecosystem. And that was very exciting. And I'd also be lying if I said, if I didn't mention that there were also some family reasons to come back. So we had a 2-year-old who had been born in the US, but being back was, both sets of grandparents were in Sydney in Australia. And so that made the decision to kind of come back. It was like, wow, there's this growing startup ecosystem, and there's also grandparents. This could be amazing. And so, yeah, it was kind of a combination of both those things.
Yeah, so I think you had a really interesting journey from Bay Area. Now you're in Australia backing some of the biggest and most successful companies out there. So I wanted to lean more into that. You talked something about unicorns. So what do you think could help to produce more unicorns in Australia, for example? And what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's such a broad question. There's so much that I think we can be doing. One thing I would anchor my answer with is that we've come such a long way. So I think, when I left Australia, there was really not much of anything when it came to venture funding. When I had my first startup in the early 2000s, it was all bootstrapped because there was no real alternative. So there was no funding. And I also was completely isolated. I felt like I was just, a founder working with my co-founders in a kind of garage somewhere. And we weren't really connected to a lot of the ideas. We felt very, very far away from the ability to kind of adopt and internalize some of the ideas that we really needed to be successful founders. And today that's not true. Today there's, some incredible funders in the ecosystem, both local and international. And there is just so much more money, available in Australia for really excellent founders. So I think, that's what I would say, is that we've come a long way. I do think that we have some kind of obstacles to overcome. I think culturally still in Australia, a lot of the really smart people are going and becoming, doctors and lawyers and investment bankers. And that's fine. We're always going to need folks in kind of the more professional industries. But I do think that we're entering a new era, or we have entered, in fact, a new era in which Australia can no longer rest on its laurels and believe that everything will be okay because we're able to kind of create an Australian airline and an Australian, you know, Australian mining companies. And we can no longer be comforted that we can just create the Australian versions of different companies. We're really living in an era of global competition. And so we need to build globally competitive companies. And that is going to require the best and the brightest in Australia to be wanting to found new companies, build, you know, large hyperscaling companies that can compete on the world stage. And I think that we have some way to go before that is kind of the default path for really excellent Australian talent.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because I've done conversations on people on the podcast from Australia, New Zealand, and they're both kind of blossoming as this startup hub for people. So what would make someone enthused, you would, in your opinion, like to join the startup ecosystem and to be a part of this new change that is coming for Australia?
Yeah, I'm such a question that's very close to my heart. So when I came back from the US, the first thing I did was I took over Startmate, which is Australia's kind of leading early stage tech community. And at the time, what it was doing was it was an accelerator for founders. And so, of course, attracting really great founders was a big part of it. But one of the things that I did while I was there was launch this program called the Startmate Fellowship, which has now kind of gone on to you know, bigger and better. There are lots of different Startmate Fellowships. But the whole point of the Startmate Fellowship was to attract from different parts of Australian society really great people to expose them to technology and tech companies as a potential career option. As a founder, yes, but also as an operator, to bring their talents, whatever those talents are, and to find their kind of power lane, the thing that's really going to empower them to be their best selves in this kind of new ecosystem. And so it's something that's very close to my heart. More recently, I invested in another early stage community called Early Work here in Australia, which organically grew out of three co-founders who had the same passion and were coming at it from the university angle. And so they created this community that kind of drew in a lot of kind of graduate students and university students and folks at the very beginnings of their career looking to jump into technology. And so I think what's required in both of those is we need bridges. We need kind of stepping stones where it's not necessarily an all or nothing bet. You know, what I think it has been is such a high barrier action that you've had to take to be a founder or to make the jump across into a technology career. It's been a really hard thing to do. And I think what we need is bridges where you can be exposed, create a network of contacts, kind of see the types of jobs and types of areas that you might be able to be a part of, and kind of get a bit of a stamp of approval too. Like, I think for a lot of folks, you know, especially if you're kind of coming from a more traditional background where it kind of makes more sense to you to kind of, you know, you've got to explain to your parents, you've got to explain to your grandparents, here's what I'm doing. Being able to have a bit of a stamp of approval to say, hey, this is like, whether it's the Startmate Fellowship or, you know, an Early Work Academy, hey, I've done this thing. I've got confidence that it will get me into a really great career. I think we need those types of things. And I think that, you know, because of Startmate and because of Early Work, they're starting to emerge, which I think is great.
Yeah, it's funny that you brought up both those Startmate and as well the Early Work. And I've heard of both of them actually through just being plugged in on X and LinkedIn and following some of this upcoming people in the Australian ecosystem, like Sachin and Adam and like many other people out there who are doing some amazing work for the ecosystem. So could you share a bit about dealing with autoimmune diseases and kind of what you learned about energy management distilled in a few lines or a few words?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that what happened, it was actually right around the time I was launching the Startmate Fellowship, over the course of about 6 months, like a series of dominoes, I just got a bunch of different autoimmune illnesses. And the most difficult part of it all, in addition to all the different symptoms and treatments and that kind of thing, was actually just managing the fatigue. And what the biggest realization I had was actually that I'd been treating my energy like this limitless resource for most of my life. I hadn't realized that it had, a limit. And I think being having that limit kind of imposed in such a low level, I mean, I had such a lack of energy, really made me develop a whole new toolkit around working out, how to manage that energy. And listen, I mean, there's so much online that you can read about this, which I'm sure is all, like, a lot of it's really, really good. But a lot of it's really just about productivity and optimizations and that kind of thing. And listen, that's fine. But for me, what I learned was more around the need to go a little bit deeper and to really spend some time working out. What are you really about? Like, what are you really put here to do? And the way to do that is to almost try to observe your own behavior. And when you're working on different things, what is it that feels like running downhill to you? What is it like, when do you feel like you're actually getting more energy from doing something versus what feels like driving with the brakes on? You know, what feels like, you know, you're just as hard as you're going, as much as you're trying, you're always kind of struggling. And so observing those things, I started to make a couple of other observations, which is like, oh yeah, I'm often getting more energy when I'm working on things that I'm curious about. And when kind of the two sides of me are working in concert, like the side of me that's more strategic and is thinking about career and ambition and achievement, but also the other side, which is that more kind of internal, what I call like the animal self, the part of you that really just, you know, is much more emotional, just kind of works on curiosity, works on more emotions. When those two parts are working together, you tend to have a lot of energy. And when they're at odds, it tends to be really tricky.
Yeah, I think you made a really great point about energy management and how you can actually manage your energy. So you'd made a point about struggling, and I'd seen in your podcast episode with Sachin and Adam that you had some mental health problems growing up. So could you just unpack for the audience today some mental health advice for founders and VCs alike? Like, what did you learn from your experience of, you know, growing up with such mental health problems?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, I think I don't really think about mental health perhaps the same way as a lot of folks do. Like, I think that while there's definitely an element to it, or the kind of dominant narrative that we have is, you know, that some folks have certain, especially when it comes to depression or anxiety and things like that, that there's like a mental imbalance and that we can kind of, you know, like fix that with medication. And listen, I think that's really important. I think it's very important that we have those medications. But I also think that there's a very natural reaction to difficult life circumstances where kind of depression and anxiety can really arise, and in a very natural, predictable way. And so I guess what I learned about, you know, kind of going through my life has been that it's not always you know, a quick fix kind of situation. Like, it's something where actually your life circumstances can be a big part of what's going on. And when I think about applying that to founders, yeah, founders, I think, are in a particularly tricky spot, because the things that I think protect and help you maintain kind of a mentally healthy situation are often your connectedness to other people, like how connected you are, And two things have been happening broadly in society. I think connections have been atrophying. You know, we've got this barbelling of relationships where a lot of pressure is either being put on your primary partner. The primary partner now has to be the, you know, the coach, the career guider, the, you know, the lover, the everything. And then everything else is kind of slips down toward Instagram relationships, you know, and like that middle ground of like really close friends is harder and harder to maintain. But then founders in particular have a problem where it's like hard to be 100% real with anyone because your family generally doesn't understand the ins and outs of what you're doing and how hard it is, unless you're really lucky and they've got some experience themselves. Your employees who you spend all of your time with, well, they're looking to you to be the strong one. You know, you can't necessarily often feel like you can be 100% open and honest with your worries with them, which can create some space. And similarly, your investors, I think often there's a feeling like, oh, I better not share this with my investor because, you know, I don't want them to freak out. And so founders are left on this island where it's hard to have these genuine connections with folks. And I think that can be really dangerous. And so I think what I've learned from my experience has been around how do you build connectedness and like deep connections with folks? Because I think that the more you do that, you know, obviously there's a role for everything. There's a role for medication. There's a role for good lifestyle, exercise, etc. But for me, it's the high order bit is like, how do you build that connectedness?
So then I wanted to pose a question to you. So just following up from that is like, how do you actually build those close connections with people? Like podcasting obviously is one way that you can build up your network, meet more people, but like, how do you do it in the real world? Like, what could you say on that front?
Great, great question. And listen, podcasting is great and networking is great, but what I'm talking about is really vulnerable relationships where you can, you know, it's you're off the record. You feel like you can say anything and, you know, it will be held in confidence. And it's just, you know, and also where you don't even need to say things sometimes, where it's just like you just feel close with that person and so, or those people. And so I think that for, you know, for founders, I think having connections with other founders can be really, really useful. It's something that we do a lot at Square Peg is bring our founders together. In fact, one of the things that we did, you know, not too long ago was we got all of our founders together in Israel to all hang out together for an extended period and, you know, form little groups among them where they could really, you know, share what was going on without us present, like taking the investors out of the mix, you know, so that they could kind of share what was going on with them. I think that's one way of connecting founders. And then I think another is really kind of looking for, you know, different ways to kind of build connections outside of work as well, so that there's this feeling that not all of your eggs are in the one basket. You know, if this particular business doesn't work out, that's not the end of everything. And so being able to have a series of connections in your life that aren't necessarily, you know, live or die on your professional success, I think is another really important pursuit.
I think those are some really great points. I think being vulnerable with your relationships and events, hosting events and finding different ways to kind of build connections outside of your work are some really key points for the audience. So my next question is, so what big swings are needed by founders to create huge Aussie tech successes? So you had a tweet, I think, where you wrote something about like big swings that are needed by founders. Right. And so like, what could you share on that front?
Yeah, so I think what I was talking about was really what I mentioned, you know, earlier, which was this idea of we need big swings because in Australia, we need to be building global winners. You know, we're no longer in a game where we can just build an Australian winner. We need to build global generational companies. For me, what I'm particularly excited about now are, you know, areas like AI and climate, where it feels like for two very different reasons, global winners are required now. you know, there's a, when it comes to climate, the reasons are obvious, right? Like the crisis has gotten so bad that now in the space of the life cycle of a venture fund that might be about 10 years, we actually need to scale huge companies that can start to, you know, that can help address some of the enormous problems we have in the climate. And so that's one kind of area. And then in AI, what the just the pace at which things are changing, I think, is creating the and opening up these brand new opportunities that we haven't seen in a long time. And that kind of gives an opportunity for, again, like really to kind of reshape and shake up industries and create new global leaders. And so that's another big opportunity for Australian companies.
Yeah, I think those are some really great points. And so my last question to you is about Square Peg Capital. So you went from principal to partner in, I think, around under 4 years. So what did it take to become a partner at Square Peg Capital? And what advice could you share for some of the aspiring VCs out here in Singapore or in Australia or whoever's listening to this podcast today?
Yeah, listen, it's a tough one because I look at it and I look back and it seems to, my investing today seems to leverage my whole life. You know, like the first week I was at Square Peg, I was looking at investing in a company that had been started by the head of engineering at Khan Academy, you know, so a guy I'd worked with really, really closely in Silicon Valley. And then, you know, last week it was one of the partners at McKinsey where I'd been for a few years who sent me an opportunity. And basically every week I'm leveraging and trading on the on all of the relationships that I built through Startmate. Because when I came back from the US, I knew nobody in this ecosystem. And it was really the community of Startmate that really embraced me and really helped me to really get to know everyone and understand you know, the ecosystem here. And so it's kind of every phase of my career is kind of being leveraged. And so I think that probably my advice would be, if I mean, it's really, I'm not even sure it's really my place to give anyone advice, but I would say that it would be to kind of, you know, take big swings with your career and don't necessarily try and do everything all at once. You know, like there is a way to leverage different experiences that you're having. At Square Peg, we have all of our investment team have essentially been kind of founders themselves or very high level operators themselves. So, you know, I was a founder and I was involved in scaling Khan Academy. Peruse, in our Southeast Asian team, was the, you know, the lead Stripe for Southeast Asia. And, you know, Paul Bassett, our co-founder, you know, built Seek, you know, which is now kind of an over $8 billion business. And so I think where we, one of the things that I think defines us as a firm is that we're really drawing on lifetimes of experience operating and founding companies, which is not to say that we know, you know, what's going on in any particular company. I think it actually operates less on that practical way where, you know, listen, your knowledge goes out of date really quickly. I think it operates more on the human level, which is that we really understand how hard it is. And we've learned some lessons, I think, as humans around, I guess, humility and how to support people that are probably more important in some ways than any particular lessons about, you know, product management or marketing or how to set up an engineering function. So hopefully that there's some, you know, lessons or advice in there, but I think that everyone's journey will ultimately...
So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I have an open opportunity to reach this audience. So if you want to reach college students and freshers interested in startups and venture capital, and just in terms of the demographics, the age of 18 to 22 is the highest age demographic, and India and US are the two largest country demographics of listeners for this podcast. Email me at bizpodruhi@gmail.com. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode, and hope you've learned something new.